Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Earlier on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
This time tomorrow, it'll be Chuck Pagano joining us. We've got the 12th annual Chuck Strong Gala coming up Friday over at the Colts Complex. I've always thought pretty cool that Jim Irsay and his family continue to want to host this. And I mean, hell, Andy, they hosted it the year after Chuck got fired.
Yeah, that's amazing. It really is.
The amount of money raised is north of $14 million for cancer research at the IU Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center. And one Andrew Luck will be making an appearance tomorrow inside of, or I guess Friday, over there at the Colts Complex. So we'll chat with Chuck, not only about that, but a variety of things. Get a little update on Andrew Luck as well with him coming up tomorrow. And then Friday, we're going to have Dane Brugler, one of our favorite draft analysts. We had him on at the Combine. He just released The Beast, which is the most encompassing, time-consuming thing you'll ever witness. Draft nerds, tell the significant other that you're heading to the bathroom and you might be in there for 5 hours and trying to properly consume all of that.
They may call the paramedics because you'll be in there for so long.
That's a great point. Yeah, 911 will be outside immediately. Andy Sweeney, number three on that list for Dane Brugler, is a name that is Malik Nabers.
Okay.
Out of LSU.
Right.
And the report yesterday from Ian Rappaport, as we get closer to the draft, 2 weeks from tomorrow, Malik Nabers making some visits around the NFL, and he has a visit reportedly to the Indianapolis Colts coming up tomorrow. What do you make of a prospect that, again, some people have, not many, but some people have ranked higher than Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Yeah.
When we're talking about a wideout, and even if you don't think that, if you think that's ludicrous, the wild consumption, or wild assumption, I should say, and Brugler indicates this, I mean, he's got Nabers as his third overall prospect. Like, he ain't going to be there at 15. What do you make of that news?
Wild consumption sounds like me on a Saturday
night.
Gosh, sounds like
something
you
happens
back
at
in
Little
the day,
Five
yeah.
down in Bloomington.
Here's my theory when I saw that. I think there's two things. I think the easy thing to say, and we'll talk with Joel A. Erickson coming up at 8 o'clock about this, is you can say, well, you no stone unturned, right? If a player happens to be there at 15, you want to make sure that you have done your due diligence. I think for me, the second thing, I'll give you three things. The second thing is, you know, just the Colts showing interest in wide receivers is always interesting to us when we talk about putting weapons around Anthony Richardson. But the other thing, and this is, and I hate this, and I don't even know, I'm going to be honest, who to even attribute this to, but Malik Nabers has already had to come out and defend his honor. He has been labeled as a little bit of a diva, as a high-maintenance prospect.
Sounds like something a politician
has
to do.
As a high-maintenance prospect. There was stuff over the weekend. It was just, you know, come on. It was just Twitter stuff that was out there. And so my thought was, do the Colts think that, you know, if he happens to scare off a couple key teams, that he could be there either at 15 or, and I know Ballard never, listen, I get he doesn't do this, or if, you know, Ballard moved up a couple spots, just a couple spots to go grab him if he was there and they had a good relationship with him. But it's kind of like your love and affection of Dallas Turner. You love Dallas Turner, the edge from Alabama. Well, guess what, big boy? He ain't going to be there at 15. That's how I feel about Malik Nabers. I mean, everyone has him going by 6 to the New York Giants.
Yeah,
everybody.
I don't even think it's Dallas. Like, there's a chance Dallas Turner might return my text. There's no chance Malik Nabers is returning my text, if you want to put it in that realm. At least that's how it seems.
The Bears have the 9th overall pick, and no one's even talking about Nabers even falling to them. So I can't imagine he falls
it was
to 15.
Tony Pauline of Sportskeeda is the one that had the report that Malik Nabers came out and said is not true, that Nabers was a high-maintenance prospect and NFL people were worried about him in that respect.
So when I saw this news yesterday, I thought, all right, after like initially almost kind of choking on the water I was drinking, I think there was also a, all right, let's try to like put the Colts hat on in this. Like, why? What's the thought process here? All of those things. You go back to the season-ending presser. What does Chris Ballard say this team needs more of? We need to get more explosive.
Right.
That was the thing he did mention repeatedly. And I say this to everybody out there. Let's all try and like focus on Ballard's words here and not focus on whatever sort of negative perception you might just
sure.
any Ballard comments.
He told us the same thing.
We totally write off.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I forget if it was at the Combine, Andy, or if it was at that season in presser, when you say you need to get more explosive, do you just mean Anthony Richardson becomes your quarterback and you naturally should be a more explosive offense? And we should probably find that audio, but I don't think he answered it in saying, oh no, this is not all on Anthony. You know, he even said to us, yards after catch was that specific thing he mentioned. And by all accounts, when you talk about an explosive player, Malik Nabers fits that mold. That is his kind of MO. Now, to your point, though, about like, there's no chance he's there at 15.
No.
And Chris Ballard trading up is as foreign as me cheering against Tiger Woods. Like, it just doesn't happen. If I look at the Ballard history, and I would probably have to double check this, but off the top of my head, gosh, I think the only time he's traded up in the first three rounds would be for Jonathan Taylor, which was like a three-pick trade-up, wasn't even that significant, back in 2020 in that COVID draft. Now, if I try to draw a parallel line to that, what's Jonathan Taylor? An explosive playmaker.
Right.
A guy that plays running back but hits home runs. And that is why Ballard thought it was worth the risk. Now, again, I think the Colts gave up a fifth rounder to move up a couple of spots to get Taylor. If you're going to move up to 8, 9, wherever to get Malik Nabers, you're mortgaging pretty much the rest of your significant draft picks coming up here in a few weeks. That probably means corner and safety don't get the attention that I think a lot of people are pegging it to potentially get here coming up. So fascinated by this. It's obviously, I love the thought of Malik Nabers with Anthony Richardson.
Oh, heavens, support. I mean, can you imagine
but
him next to Michael Pittman
the
Jr.?
The realistic nature of it, I am scratching my head at a little bit of how feasible is this. But I'm trying to, like, again, I'm trying to get away from the everything Ballard does is stupid. Like, everyone, I think, knows my thoughts on Chris Ballard here that listens to our show. So I'm just trying to get to the why and the how of where is the rationale between bringing him in for a visit. And how realistic do you think it is you would potentially draft the guy?
Like, even if he fell, and Mark mentioned the Bears draft at 9, like, Odunze has been in a lot of mock drafts, mm-hmm. okay? He's been in a ton of the mock drafts of Odunze going 9. Even if Nabers fell and became the third wide receiver, and that would be as far as he would fall, he still wouldn't get to 15. The question then would be, you know, would Ballard move up those few spots? Like you mentioned with Jonathan Taylor, Mel Kiper has his newest mock draft out. By the way, he has Nabers going 6 to the Giants. I mean, that's basically
I haven't seen Nabers outside of the top.
No, top 6.
I was going to say 8, but yeah, probably more top 6.
He has Bowers going 10, and then you get into, you know, where you have some corners and some offensive linemen are going off the board before you get to the Colts at 15. You know, a move up, if he happened to be there, you're sitting there at the 10th pick and Bowers goes at 10, and now, you know, at 11, let's see, you have the Chargers, and they go with an offensive lineman, you're Chris Ballard. I'm like, oh my God, whether this be Odunze or Nabers are out there moving up a few spots and mortgaging a third-round pick or something like that. You know I'm all about that. But boy, I just Nabers hasn't got past 6 in any of these mock drafts, none of them.
Thank you to Brett, a couple of people on Twitter. Yeah, Ballard did move back in the third round to take Nick Cross. That would be the other trade-up that those are the only two I can really think of. Basically, what I'm saying is this doesn't happen. Like, we do not see trade-ups, let alone a trade-up from 15 to 8 is astronomically different than a trade-up to even get Nick Cross or a trade-up to get Jonathan Taylor. Mark, you said you found that clip. Yep. This is Ballard with us back at the Combine on adding explosive playmakers.
Yeah, he was talking about the Rams game and how he thought they were hanging with them, but they just need more explosive play. So this is Taylor.
Rams game with Richardson.
Right, and this is the end of that conversation. In a second.
I have, like, it's the one thing about, like, Jonathan Taylor. Like, Jonathan can turn a 1-2 yard run into a 40-50 yard run. Having, you know, making sure we add another element to the offense that's really good after the catch that can create the play that's not there.
Could not agree more with Ballard there. I mean, I absolutely could not agree more with him of you just need, and they're hard to find, but they do come in different shapes and sizes. Guys that you hand the football to and they do it. Shane Steichen doesn't have to whip up some X and O that all of a sudden is just, oh my gosh, the coaching room is gasping at how beautiful that play looks. You just need dudes to be dudes at some point. And I'm talking all caps.
Put and that the Colts, on a shirt. Dude, I'm totally with you, man.
And the Colts have not had that at receiver in quite some time. And again, Jonathan Taylor brings that. Watch Jonathan Taylor's touchdown run against Houston in that season finale. You know, the 90-some percent of running backs in the NFL don't make that cut. Don't take that to the house. So providing that at wideout would be very interesting. So a question to throw Joel Erickson's way coming up here in about 10 minutes.
Shams, by the way, and that's a good sound, Mark. Thanks for finding that. Shams reporting here within the last 10 minutes. We talked about the calf strain to Giannis last night. He left the game last night there in Milwaukee. Let's see here. Shams reporting now. Woj has also added some context, but Shams report, I think first, that Giannis has avoided major damage to or any damage to his left Achilles tendon that is intact. That's a best-case outcome. His return to play is based on treatment and rehab response from the strain for the strained calf. Also, Shams, that calves are undeniably tricky in these types of strains, have a timetable of at least 1 to 2 weeks. Rehab will determine a length of time for the two-time NBA MVP.
So let's play that
They're
out.
They're done. They are so
One
done.
1 to 2 weeks, the Bucks will be in a playoff game starting next weekend. So Saturday or Sunday, that'd be right at the middle of that 1 to 2 week timetable.
Sunday is their final regular season game.
Yeah, and their first playoff game will be next Saturday or Sunday. And the Pacers could be in the same boat. You know, for those unfamiliar with how the playoff schedule works for the NBA, Pacers will play Friday and Sunday, their two final regular season games. If they're in the play-in, which right now it doesn't look like they will be, they still need to handle their own business, the play-in will be next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So that's when the play-in games happen. If you make a, if you're a top six seed, you get a full week off. So that's the advantage of what the Pacers are playing for, and certainly for the Bucks with Giannis. And Milwaukee has not clinched a seed. So, I mean, there's a chance, Andy, you could see Milwaukee fall to the three and Indiana be the six.
Well, they're a okay, so Milwaukee wakes up today. They're a game ahead of the Knicks, and then they're two games ahead of the Cavs, Magic. The Cavs and Magic 2.5 ahead of the Pacers.
So we would have to see what the tiebreakers would look like and all of that. But huge news last night in the NBA. Milwaukee has already had questions with Giannis this season. The Pacers have created some of those questions with how they've played him. Obviously, these two teams haven't met in months. I mean, the Pacers haven't seen him since Halliburton's injury. And, you know, last night for Halliburton, he scores the most points he has since pre-injury. So I cannot recall, and you know, part of this, Andy's probably like, well, you know, the Pacers haven't been in this position in quite some time where we actually are focusing on the Eastern Conference standings here on April 10th, but it is insanely jumbled and tons of personnel questions. The health of Giannis, Julius Randle's done for the year, the health of Donovan Mitchell, Joel Embiid's return and where he's at. The Pacers, I guess, have a little bit kind of secondary injury questions with obviously Mathurin.
Right.
And then, you know, okay, is Halliburton truly out of the slump? All of that. Outside of Boston, it's like everybody has questions, which should make for, I would say, a rather unpredictable Eastern Conference. And the same thing could be said for out West as well. And that's not something I'm used to with NBA playoffs.
Yeah, and the one I'm focusing on the most right now is probably Donovan Mitchell, just because there's a chance those two teams play. The Pacers and Cavs.
Well,
I mean, they have one game left.
And they're going to play Friday.
Yeah, they
which,
play on Friday.
Again,
and then
the heads up for grabs.
Yeah.
It's very interesting how everything is playing out right now.
Ty Jerome's on that team, that Cavs team. Remember Ty Jerome on the Virginia team?
Boy, PTSD for Purdue fans.
I know,
hearing that
name. Purdue fans. I'm just looking at their injury report, exactly what their injuries look
like. I always thought he played
like.
In slow motion.
He looked like it. He's a good player, though.
Kyle Anderson plays in slow motion.
Yeah,
you know Kyle Anderson?
I know Kyle Anderson, UCLA product.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Pacers slow motion early last night, but then the liquid IV from McConnell and Toppin ignited things.
We'll take a break here. On the other side, Joel A. Erickson from from the Star joins us. All your Colts updates, we'll do it next. 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Our next guest, probably in a good mood after last night, is Brewers. Get it done over the Reds.
Big 9-5 win.
That series so far, 1-1 on the year. And very nice start to the year for the Brewers, I would think. With where they're at, 7-3 currently. He is Joel A. Erickson from the Indianapolis Star. At one point, I wore a Brewers tank of his. Hopefully, that'll be the only clothing I ever wear of his. Nothing against your clothing, Joel, but hopefully that'll be it. Nice start to the season for your Brewers, right, at 7-3?
Yeah. Very, very encouraging. I mean, obviously, it's only 10 games in. I was actually there last night.
Oh. How was Great American? Yeah.
It was a little cold, a little rainy, but my son came home with a ball autographed by Jackson Churio. So,
oh man, that's great.
That's gonna be worth some money.
How about that?
Wow, Eclipse on Monday, that on Tuesday. What a week for the Erickson boys.
Very strong, very strong. Yep.
Nice. I love that there. So, did you drive back last night?
Yeah. We usually just go up and back.
Sure. Oh, well, congrats on the win. You know, there's 162 of them, so I can live with that if it makes your family happy here on April 9th. Speaking of making people happy, Colts fans might have had that reaction yesterday, Joel, when Ian Rappaport reported that Malik Nabers is visiting the Colts for a top 30 visit tomorrow. There's part of me that says, well, it's a draft. You do your homework on everybody. But then I'm like, man, is that just like homework you shouldn't even worry about? What do you make of potential Malik Nabers background checks by the Colts here?
So we know in the past that there are things that can be in a player's background that like essentially take them off the Colts board. You know, we've kind of found that out over the years. And I don't know for sure, you know, I don't have any firsthand reporting on Nabers. I know there are some like reports and stuff out there that there might be something going on. Sometimes I don't know if this is what the Colts are doing. I know the Saints used to do this when I covered them. Sometimes you bring a guy in for a visit if you're, you know, that background check stuff and that evaluation, you're not sure about some stuff and you want to have a chance to ask more questions one-on-one. So that's also possible too.
Could you see like him lurking on the board and a trade up? We went over it last segment, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think a couple pick trade up for Jonathan Taylor, a trade up for Nick Cross. I mean, that's it really in the Ballard era in the first couple rounds of significance. If you were to move up for Nabers, it would be the most foreign Chris Ballard thing I would argue he's done in his tenure.
Yeah, I'd be shocked. A trade up for a wide receiver in this draft, I think would pretty much, you know, blow the lid off of the media room in terms of expectations on draft night. And it's hard to see, you know, I think we all know this if we've been watching like the mock drafts and the analysts and stuff. It's hard to see any of those top three receivers really getting into range.
Yeah, there's no chance. I don't even think Brock Bowers is going to get there. That's a conversation for a different time. Joel A. Erickson with us here. He's on the Payless Liquors hotline from the Indianapolis Star. We're talking some Colts football a couple weeks away from the NFL draft. Boy, you can't believe anything, Joel. And I know in your reporting, you're trying to find out, hey, what the Colts are thinking. It's so difficult. All the misinformation, the mock drafts are out there. But boy, what do they mean? Sometimes they don't mean very much at all. But as we sit here a couple weeks out, what is your strongest thought right now that you have? I'll let you take it anywhere, any way you want to go. What's the strongest thought you have on the Colts as they enter this draft season?
Well, I think that, you know, it's kind of become commonplace for the Colts to enter the draft cycle with some obvious needs, and then they fill those fairly early, which means, like, if we're going based off of that and based off of prior history, doesn't it feel like it's corner in one round and wide receiver in the next one, or vice versa in some order. That's kind of how it feels in this draft, especially with, you know, corner having depth in the first round, but maybe not the top guys, wide receiver having depth throughout, Colts having need at both positions. That feels like to me, like the way I'd handicap it right now is just it's both of those positions in the first three rounds. It's just what's the order.
He's Joel A. Erickson from The Star. He's rejoicing in his Brewers win from last night. Most importantly, quite the item there for his son via an autograph. Joel is with us here on the Payless Stickers Hotline. Joel, I thought you had a great comment a few weeks back in describing the secondary question for the Colts right now, and you used the phrase, I think you need to raise the floor of that unit. You know, you could make an argument there is some ceiling raisers in that room, whether it's Juju Brents, whether it's Nick Cross, you know, guys you've drafted high that could take big jumps. If I had to pin you on, you think you're more questions at corner or more questions at safety, where would you go?
With Julian Blackmon back, I feel like my question shifts more to outside corner. With Cross, I kind of feel like they kind of did this to themselves a little bit, where it took them a long time to put him in the lineup last year. So like some of the unknown with Nick Cross is just they didn't put him in the lineup. We've only seen him play, you know, a month's worth of games because the coaching staff waited a little too long to make a change there. Corner, you know, you've got injuries. You got injury questions with Juju Brents. Dallas Flowers is coming off of a torn Achilles, which is typically a very difficult injury in the first year to come back from. And then you got Jalen Jones, who I know the Colts really, really like, but is still a seventh round pick and a young player. So, and going up against a much better stretch of corner or quarterback. So I feel like corner for me is still the one that sticks out.
Joel A. Erickson with us here. He's from the Indianapolis Star. Joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. What's your theory on Julian Blackmon? That was announced yesterday. He signed his deal and did some media rounds and everything else. I mean, we know he got the one-year deal. He went out. He visited the Niners. He visited the Bills. Was this one of those things? Ballard said, go out. If you can get a big-time deal or a better deal, that's great. If not, come back. I know you want to be back. We want you back. What's your theory on what happened here the last couple weeks with Julian?
This has kind of happened with the Colts before. There's probably one of these, you know, every other year or so where you have a player who goes out and kind of tests the market and sees what they can get. The first one that jumps to mind, I know Clayton Gathers was like that. I'm sure there's other ones in Ballard's tenure like that. But this does happen every once in a while where you have a player who, you know, maybe wants to see what he can get, see if he can get a better deal than what the Colts are offering on the open market, takes a couple visits. I would bet that the Blackmon's agency was probably hoping that with some of the safeties on the market, that some of them would end up getting deals and sort of raise the possibilities of that market. It hasn't really happened. I think the fact that Justin Simmons and Quandre Diggs are still unsigned is like they're probably waiting for something to happen that's not happening. The only real outlier there is McKinney in terms of the long-term deal so far. So I think they probably were hoping that something would shake free with the safety market. But, you know, if when we were all paying attention to this, like if you were paying attention and saw Cameron Curl go for, you know, a fairly low-cost deal, short-term deal, saw Jordan Fuller go for a short-term deal, like that, the writing on the wall was on the wall there for what Blackmon was going to be able to get.
As that's Xavier McKinney moving on from the Giants to the Packers there, Joel referencing at the top of the safety market. Good. Joel A. Erickson with us here on the from the Indianapolis Star on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Joel, you can't say wide out, you can't say defensive back. What's the next biggest draft need for the Colts?
Well, I mean,
and how far are you dropping to that need if you're kind of ranking them?
Well, the next biggest draft need, and I think that the pursuit that we now know about with Danielle Hunter illustrates this, is edge rusher. But in terms of dropping, like to get that guy, it becomes much, much more unlikely after the first round. So, you know, they probably still want that super quick, super fast edge rusher off the outside. If you're going to do that, it's usually a first round type thing. I would say you know, running back to me is a sneaky one here. You know, they've got Trey Sermon back. He had a couple good games, but you still probably want some more depth behind Jonathan Taylor there. The draft is kind of a low-cost way to get it. That's the way the league's kind of approached it. And Chris Ballard's got some good history with drafting running back. So I think that's one that you see, and that's one you can get, you know, I think you can get a full-on backup to Jonathan Taylor into the fourth round or the fifth round if you've got the right evaluation.
You know, it's funny, while you were talking, Joel, and Joel A. Erickson with us from the Star here on the Fan on this Wednesday, I'm looking, and, you know, Mel Kiper has him taking Terrion Arnold now the corner. He actually has, again, this is just a silly mock draft, he has Quinyon Mitchell actually going as high now as number 12. So being off the board, I know he's a guy we've talked a lot about, and so, you know, that would be the second corner there. And then, you know, really just Dallas Turner would be off the board. So if you wanted to even go pass rusher there at 15, right now there is a belief that you would get the second best pass rusher or maybe even the second best corner. So that's interesting as well. Joel, we haven't had you on in the last few weeks, so I'll ask you this. I've asked others that we've had on. What criticism is fair or unfair with the team run it back philosophy that Chris Ballard seemingly has put together this offseason, after a few guys, you mentioned Hunter specifically, after a few guys went other places, he couldn't get a couple outside free agents, and so now it's team run it back for the most part. What's fair, what's unfair with the criticism that Ballard's taken over that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the things that's fair is they haven't done anything that you're sitting here right now and you go, okay, that's definitely better than it was last year. That's the biggest thing with the run it back. This is sort of the raise the floor versus raise the ceiling. Like, outside of those young guys really developing, there's no addition from the outside that you can count on that you go, okay, that position group is much better. That piece of the offense or defense is much better based on free agency. They're as we know it right now, the same team hoping for and believing there's going to be development from young guys. You don't have the outside guy who you can say, okay, we can count on that person. I think the if there's an unfair piece, like it would be, you know, he didn't do anything. Not doing anything would have been letting everybody walk. That's maybe a quibble of language, but there are teams that end up doing that in free agency some years because they're, you know, in one spot or the other, and they end up letting a whole bunch of people head off to other happier pastures for bigger contracts. He didn't let the free agency create any massive holes, and that could have happened. Kenny Moore,
sure.
Grover Stewart, even Blackman, any of those, if you don't get those guys back, there's an enormous hole that you have to fill. They don't have those. But they didn't do anything else to you know, push them to the next level from a free agency standpoint.
Joel, last one for me, and appreciate your time here. Joel A. Erickson from the Star with us. So the Colts are only having 6 OTAs. I'm pretty sure they're allowed to have up to 10. You know why they elected just to do 6?
I don't. That's going to be an interesting. I think we get Shane Steichen next week.
Yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah, I think we get Shane Steichen next week. I actually wrote that down as kind of a, hey, I'm, you know, keep this on your radar. I don't know how intrigued people are by it, but I'm a little intrigued by the off-season schedule and what they're doing, how it works out. So yeah, I don't know exactly what the thought was there.
Yeah, because kind of my thought was, even if Anthony Richardson is going to be on some sort of a maintenance schedule, like maybe he doesn't do back-to-back days, I would find it very beneficial for Joe Flacco to run, you know, the starting offense for those days. Again, OTAs, we're still a little over a month away from that. You can have up to 10. The Colts electing only to have 6 and then a 3-day mandatory minicamp in early June. Joel, congrats on the Brewers. Congrats on the gift coming home. That might be more important than the win, frankly, just for your sanity as a parent. Hopefully the Reds win the series, though.
I do not hope that, but yeah, whenever you can take your kids somewhere and they end up getting something, the best part was normally we, normally we try to get there early, and because the kids like to, you know, have a ball and kind of hang out by the fence and just see if anybody's over there.
Sure.
We didn't do that. We didn't get out of Fisher's early enough. And a police officer handed Sager a foul ball that he then had to give to Jackson Churio to sign. It worked out.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really, really good dad stuff. Really good dad moments.
Humanity alive and well. We love to see it. Joel, congrats. I'll see you next week, man.
Thanks, Joel.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
By the way, it's a 7:30 tip for Pacers and Cavs. Final road game of the year. Sunday, it'll be the afternoon. That'll be a 1 o'clocker against Atlanta. I will apologize up front to our next guest, Dustin Napierak from the Indianapolis Star. Outstanding coverage of the Pacers. Dustin, playoff scenarios make my head hurt. So I apologize for probably making your head hurt to start this conversation on this Wednesday morning. But it's not a guarantee the Pacers make the top six with just one more win, right?
I think it is, actually. I think it's a guarantee that they make the top six because
just one more win?
Tiebreaker. Yeah, they have the tiebreaker over both Philly and Miami because they beat them. They've got 2 out of 3 against both of those. So if they were to – let me just double-check and make sure I'm doing my math right.
I thought Miami had an extra game left.
What's up?
I thought Miami had an extra game, but or Philly had an extra game or one of the two, but maybe that has no bearing.
I think they do have an extra game, but even if they do, so basically like Indiana, let's see here. So Philly's 45-35, so that makes them, so if they win, they should have 2 more games left. So that would make them 47-34, and if the Pacers win one, or 47-35, the Pacers will be 47-35 if they win one more. Miami's also 44-35, so even if Miami wins out, so they should have 3 left. So if Miami wins out, they would also be 47-35. And so, you know, again, if the Pacers get to 47-35, they have the tiebreaker.
I was unsure of multi-team tiebreakers. And again, now we're getting into a different stratosphere of pain pills. So I'm sorry here.
But they do have the head-to-head in both cases. I mean, they're 2-1 on both of them. So, I mean, I don't know if something else goes sideways there, but I mean, I think they should be fine. I think at the end of the day, they should be fine if they win one more game.
Let's save that. They should be fine from Dustin Napierak just in case something happens. Miami actually has. They have Toronto twice, and they have the Mavericks at home. So those are the games that they have going right now. Dustin Napierak joins us here on the Payless Liquors Hotlines from the Indy Star following the Pacers. Couple more games left, and then we'll be into playoff time. Just looking at the standings, and we talked about it there being the sixth seed. You know, right now it would be Pacers and Knicks. We still could have Pacers and Magic. There's a lot of things that could happen. Is there a better matchup, or I guess I should ask, what's the best matchup for the Pacers in the first round? I'm not being picky. I love what they've done this season, but if you could wish upon us a matchup that would be good for them to advance, what do you think it would be?
Well, it depends on what happens in Giannis Antetokounmpo's MRI today, because if Giannis is out, then it's Milwaukee. You know, for sure. I think, I mean, and that's probably the case for everybody. I mean, if things go really poorly for Giannis and he's out, you know, I think that's the team you want to play, no matter who you are. I think, you know, that's a team that I think everybody matches up well against. I think Orlando is a team you want to avoid. Matchup wise, that's kind of what stands out to me is they've had issues with those guys, but they did just beat them last time, you know, in Orlando. And I think they're better built to deal with them. They've obviously taken, you know, 2 out of 3 from the Knicks, 4 out of 5 from the Bucks. They're 2 out of 3 from Cleveland so far. You know, obviously, I think you have some determination whether they win that game or lose that game if you'd rather they play them. But if they beat Cleveland, they, you know, can't play Cleveland in the tournament, basically, because they would, you know, basically pass them at that point. So, I mean, I think I think you'd least rather play the Knicks just because I think Jalen Brunson looks really good, and Brunson looks like he's just on a mission. I think that's sort of one of those things. That's one of those things you look at at the end of the year is who really seems like they're on a mission and figuring it all out. You know, Brunson looks like a guy you do not want to play. So I would say, you know, I think the Knicks are the team that you most want to avoid. But, you know, they've beaten everybody. And I think that's obviously the wild team about just discussing this Pacers team. I mean, the most important thing they have is that if you're playing a playoff team, that means you're not playing a terrible team. And they tend to be really bad against terrible teams. So, you know, like they're going to be up for whoever they play. So it's not a bad, you know, a horrible matchup for them either way, because they're going to be up for it. You don't have to worry about them looking at somebody's record and being like, we're getting this one tonight. So that helps. So I think out of the teams that are available, I think Orlando is who you want to avoid because of the size. But even then, it's not a death wish. I mean, I don't think if they get Orlando that they're in as much trouble as I would have thought a month and a half ago.
Dustin Aperak with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Obviously covers the Pacers for the Star. Dustin, I don't know what my question is with this, but I just want to point out what TJ McConnell and Obi Toppin have done. Like, if you would have said at the start of the year, the Pacers are going to have two key bench guys help make their playoff push. Well, first off, Toppin was a starter at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. There were questions if McConnell would even be in the rotation, and yet here we are, and they've just been incredible is a big word to use, but they've been such important pieces to really getting you away from an ugly start last night, and their consistency and their scoring punch has been absolutely vital in a recent run here where the bench has been kind of a mashed-up unit given the injuries and the trades.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, they're fascinating players, and they really enjoy playing together, which is fun. You obviously got to look at this two different ways, and then both of those guys, for opposite reasons, could have had a bad attitude, it's impossible for those two guys to have a bad attitude. Like, if you've been around them, they're just, there aren't too many guys who just enjoy playing basketball more than they do. And obviously, they're totally different body types, totally different forms of athleticism, but they're never not bringing energy. I mean, they're never not, moving things along. And, they push pace, and you don't think of them as the guys that are the reasons why they play as fast as they do, but obviously they went and got Obi because he likes to run and play in transition and get up and dunk the basketball, and you thought, okay, well, he's going to play with Tyrese, and that's how it's going to go. But you get Siakam, and obviously once you get Siakam, there's not really a space in the lineup for Toppin, and they'd already moved him out by that point because they wanted more defense, and that's not necessarily Toppin's forte. But he really gets running, and he's, just able to get to rim and finish in so many ways. Obviously, he can dunk, but I mean, like, his layup package is, I think, better than anybody realized. Just his ability to finish through contact. He's been just so very good at that, and put himself in position to score. And obviously, TJ's just been incredible. And just for lack of a better term, unorthodox, just offensive style, he's just been so consistent. And I think he's really taken it upon himself. Since Mathurin's been out, you look at the second unit and say, well, TJ's the only guy that can beat you off the bounce, on a consistent basis. And I think he's taken that seriously and said, well, then I have to. And he's had to gear himself to score in ways that he really never has at any point in his career, probably back to when he was at Chartiers Valley in high school. I mean, like, Duquesne, he didn't have to do this. Arizona, he didn't have to do this. He's never had to do this as a pro. But it's just, he's called upon to have to go score and have to go get buckets, and he has. I mean, he's averaging way more field goal attempts than he ever has, per 36 and even per game. He's playing fewer minutes than he's ever played in his career, and he's scoring more. And it's just been incredible what he's done. I think he's their fourth-leading scorer since the break. It's just wild to consider just how important he's been as a scorer. I mean, I think he'd have been shocked if he told him this is what his role was going to end up being in terms of how things shook out. But, especially since Mathurin went down, they've needed him, and he has absolutely delivered.
We're talking some Pacers. Dustin DePere joins us from the Star. Pacers winners last night, 140-123 in Toronto, and now it's a Friday matchup, 7:30 in Cleveland. It does look like, Donovan Mitchell, he's set to play tonight, it looks like. So probably, we'll see. Wednesday, if he comes through that well, he'll be there on Friday. I want to go back to something you said, because you mentioned, Dustin, you mentioned Benedict Mathurin's name like three times there in that that answer. And I sure thought when he went down that we would be talking a lot more about the loss of Benedict Mathurin. And I feel like, you know, you haven't been writing a ton of stories on Mathurin. We haven't done a lot of segments on, well, woe is the Pacers, woe is me. If they had Mathurin in this game, this would be different or that would be different. Does that surprise you? I mean, I know this team has had quality depth, and we talked about TJ and Obi really picking up the slack, but does that surprise you that Mathurin's injury hasn't been something the last several weeks that we've been going back to?
A little, but I think it does. You have to give credit to the guys for that, because I think he's been an important loss. I mean, and I do. I mean, like, especially when they were really doing a poor job of shooting the three ball. I know that sounds strange because Mathurin was not the best 3-point shooter, but he was really starting to come along in that. I mean, I think I would caution against saying, oh man, maybe Benedict Mathurin doesn't matter that much. He's a really good player, and he'd really come along. I think he definitely was doing a better job of playing within the system. I think he was doing a lot better of catch and shoot threes, which is something I think he needed to work on because he's a guy that, you know, he enjoys one-on-one isolation basketball, and they had to kind of push him to be like, no, there are cases when we throw you the ball, we expect you to shoot it right now. You know, and like his teammates, Tyrese, et cetera, were the sort of guys telling him that, like, no, I'm throwing you that pass, shoot the ball, don't sit there and wait for somebody to defend you so that you can cook him up off the dribble, you know, take that shot now. And he'd grown up with that, and I think he got to be a better defender. He got better at moving the basketball. His assists were higher. His efficiency was higher. I mean, I think he was really coming along. I mean, this was definitely an adjustment year. There were definitely some growing pains, I think, involved, but I thought he came along a lot better. But I think it says more for what the other guys have done than what his value really is. I mean, I think that there was definitely a period where they were struggling without him because they really had lost something when it came to score and punch and, you know, kind of a catch-and-shoot wing, you know, 3-point option there, as well as a guy that could beat you off the dribble and, you know, score around the rim. I mean, they lost a substantial amount of points in the second unit when he went. But McConnell's been tremendous, because Toppin has finished everything you've thrown at him. You know, you haven't seen it. Like, it hasn't been as obvious, but it is still a thing, and I'm not sure that it won't matter at some point in time that, you know, they don't have a guy like Mathurin down the stretch. When a guy's away long enough, you kind of forget about that. But I mean, he did a lot this season. He made a lot of progress.
Sure.
So it does still matter. But I think, again, it speaks just volumes about how well TJ McConnell's played, and again how well Toppin has done what he does, that you're not, that the second unit point numbers haven't dropped off at all.
Like, overall wins losses, it's hard to argue. I mean, this has been a successful season. I do think the one bummer is just you didn't get Mathurin for this final stretch run, and for the most part kind of a redshirt year, not the end of the world, but kind of a redshirt year here for Jairus Walker. Again, Dustin Dupirak with us from the Indianapolis Star. Dustin, we're now a couple of months into the Pascal Siakam experience. Obviously, his playoff history, well-documented. Your opinion changed at all in him signing a long-term deal with the Pacers this offseason?
Not yet, no. I mean, I think, you know, obviously it's not a sure thing, but I do think he's enjoying himself. It's interesting. I think he can see fit here. I think he can see opportunity here. You know, I mean, you never know if he's got some other ideas in mind, if there's a city he'd rather go to, if somebody's, you know, like, talking to his agent about another good fit. I mean, like, I have no idea if that's true. But as far as just watching him, how he fits with this group, how he sees his role, I mean, I think it's grown positively. I think he really likes playing with Tyrese Haliburton. Obviously, that's the biggest sell. If you're another All-Star caliber player, is that, you know, like, this, the All-Star that's already there is going to try to get through the ball. Is going to try to involve you, and I think Haliburton went so far out of his way to make sure Siakam is felt comfortable. But he's looked at for opportunities, and I think it was, you know, really notable when, you know, when they I think they beat Toronto at home, and he went to Fred VanVleet and basically said, okay, let's talk about Pascal. Or no, it wasn't Toronto, it was Houston. Basically, when they beat Houston at home, because that's where VanVleet is now. And he stopped Fred VanVleet, who was injured, and basically was just, you know, walking around in street clothes and said, hey, how do I best set up Pascal? Like, he just stopped him right after the game, and he saw it on video because, like, the TV cameras were there. So, like, little stuff like that Haliburton does, I think, is really, you know, really gone out of way to make sure that he's maximizing what Siakam could do. And I think Siakam's noticed that. I think he enjoys just the chemistry with this group. He enjoys, you know, how much they already had a pretty well you know, put together, you know, brand of chemistry. These guys really like each other. I mean, it's not like a podcast on from that Tim Legler was on, just saying like, hey, like that's noticeable around the league. You know, if you look around the league in terms of who really likes being together as a team, like the Pacers are up there. So I think Siakam's caught on to that. I think that, you know, they have certainly started to learn of, all right, when we can't figure anything out, we can throw it at him. He can make a play. I think that's one sort of critique he's had or voiced when it's come to press conferences, saying like, I'm not sure they know what I can do yet. I think he senses that they're figuring it out. That, you know, if other things aren't working out, if you just throw him the ball, you know, if he could post somebody up, he can make a play. He can hit a fadeaway over somebody. He can spin and get a layup, and they're figuring out that he can do that when all else fails. And so I think there's been a lot of growth there, and I think he's grown as a player. I think he's, I think he's taken more defense more seriously recently than he did, you know, early, in his tenure. And so, you know, he's rebounded the ball a lot better, and that's allowed them to turn a lot more into transition. He's played fantastic, and I think they've done a really good job of integrating him, and they've been really devoted to making sure it works. So I don't think there's much the Pacers could have done. If he ends up going in another direction, I don't think there's, you know, anything the Pacers could say that they didn't try. And obviously there's the money piece of that at the back end. But in terms of how they play basketball, I don't think there's anything they could have done to make him feel comfortable and make him feel like this is a good spot for him.
Dustin, we'll close it out with this. Hope I'm not catching you too off guard at this one. Again, Dustin Dupirak from The Star covers the Pacers. In a previous stop, I really enjoyed your coverage when you did this. You were covering multiple college basketball teams here in the state. Mm-hmm. Purdue was one of those teams on your docket. When you did have interactions with Matt Painter, just any anecdote, anything that stood out to you? I know it was, you know, prior to this kind of Zach Edey-centric run here, if you want to label the last 2 years as that, but anything from your interactions with Matt Painter over the years that has stood out to you?
Oh, God, a lot. I mean, I guess I could share this one thing. I mean, like, he was the guy, you know, he called me when I got laid off at The Athletic. You know, he made a point to actually call, you know, and I think I got a text from Val Jordan, ran into him a lot after that, and he and I have talked a bunch since then. The other guy I covered didn't hear from, just for the record there, but the Painter was you know, he was obviously, that was really cool just in general. Like, he made a point to say, hey, man, like, tough break. You know, I just want to say we appreciate your coverage and everything like that. And that was really cool on his part. But that was it. And it fell in line to what he was like. I think it's just fun how much he puts out his philosophy, you know, out there to, like, as a reporter, you can kind of learn from talking to him. Like, he's so comfortable in his own skin. You know, coaches are so nervous about putting out their philosophy, or whether it's about basketball or whether it's about recruiting or anything, and they're nervous about admitting to their failures when they didn't do something right. And I thought it is, at all points, talking with Painter was great, because he would just sort of talk through things with you. You know, I mean, like, he basically, you know, he talked about how he reconsidered recruiting, you know, around that time, basically after they had a couple bad years around 12, 13, 13, 14, 14, 15, it was just like, you know what, I felt like I always had to go get the best player in the state just to say I did it. And it was like, I stopped doing that. I realized, like, I've got to build to what I want to be, and I want to go get guys that fit what I want to do and personalities that fit me. And I tried to do that, and that's kind of what he's done since. And then he comes to this point of, you know, when he was losing early round tournament games and saying, all right, well, I must be screwing something up. You know, what am I doing wrong here? And I think he just realized, like, it's a small tweak, but I've got to go get, you know, I wasn't prioritizing athleticism, and at a certain point that was burning me, because I didn't have anybody that could defend small guards. I needed somebody who could get down and defend, and he goes against Lance Jones and he fills up that hole. And so I think it's been, he's just a fun guy to cover, because you learn while you're doing it. You know, I mean, like, just his approach makes so much sense. When you're around those guys, you see that his personality kind of ends up fitting theirs. I mean, I saw the Elite Eight team with Carson Edwards and Ryan Klein and some of those guys, and it was just like their personality really fit him. Like, he, you know, he's got, like, his, you know, wise ass comments basically, and they all have them too. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very comfortable team, because they can, you know, make jokes about each other, and it fits. Like, nobody gets bothered by it, and everybody can have a good line, and they're good. You know, like, it's a team that really fits well. I mean, I presume this group is like that, because that group was like that. And so it's just, yeah, it's a really fun beat to cover. You know, basically, and it's because Painter sets the tone that way.
Great stuff. Thank you, Dustin, for that. Safe travels coming up to Cleveland on Friday, wherever the playoffs will take you. And as always, man, thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.